Okay, the leading talk for our last session is will be given by Chuck Bardeen. The title is Simulations of PMCs During the AIM Time Period Using Whack-em Karma Model.
Okay, thank you. What I'm going to show here are some old results that I did with a previous version of Whack-em. And then some newer things that I've attempted to do just recently, but not really funded for this, so you'll see a lot of it is sort of preliminary at this point. The simulations that I'm going to show you are using Whack-em, the whole atmosphere community climate model that we've heard about before, but using a different parameterization, using a sectional microphysics package called KARMA, the Community Aerosol and Radiation Model for Atmospheres. And this has been interactively coupled with Whack-em. And I'm going to show you two different versions. One is this version using an older version of Whack-em, Whack-em 319, that's done at 4x5 and has 125 levels and is a free-running model. And then what I've been playing with in the last few weeks is using SD Whack-em, which is the specified dynamics version of Whack-em, Whack-em 4, at a higher resolution, a horizontal resolution. And the specified dynamics means we're nudging to meteorology to try to recreate the actual time periods. So I got some interesting black lines on here, but this is how the model is coupled. We have it interactively, and there's a sectional microphysics, and this is being used for several different cloud and aerosol problems, and I've implemented a PMC model in this framework and allows us to integrate with the microphysics and the radiation deposition code that's in the rest of the model. So this is the microphysics that is implemented in this model. So it starts with the influx of ablated meteors using the Kalashnikova et al. Ablation profile and assuming 16 kiloton a year influx rate. And then we put that into the smallest bin, which is 0.2 nanometers, and then that's coagulated to build up a size distribution of the meteor smoke particles. And then, as Uwe mentioned, this is using a heterogeneous nucleation code and not assuming any charges on the dust particles to then create the ice crystals, interactively using the water vapor from the model. And the model can now also be coupled to the radiation scheme, although the simulations I'm using aren't coupled to radiation. And also added coagulation of dust with ice in this run. We lost a figure. What I was trying to show over here was a shows the profile that shows the meridional circulation that in the summer hemisphere, you don't get a lot of large dust particles. You get on the order of 10 or 20 particles that are bigger than 10 nanometers, and it tends to be higher in altitude than the PMC range, which people have thought is a challenge for nucleating ice particles using dust. Here we look at the dust distribution. This is the plot from Mark's paper. This is the Whack-em model in the middle. This is Linda's 2D model down below. This is the SOFIA observation up here. The scaling is arbitrary, sort of based on picking a refractive index, but you can see the seasonality in the vertical distribution is similar to what you get from the models. There it was. Got stuck in an animation of some kind. So if you can quickly follow that. Sorry about that. So in this paper that I wrote in 2010, using the Whack-em 319, I did pretty extensive comparisons with SOFI and SIPS. But because it's a free-running model, I had to do statistical comparisons. So this is looking at the Northern Hemisphere 2007 season. What you're seeing here is the distribution of the extinction at the maximum altitude, or the Z max, where the maximum extinction is. And you can see that the Sophie in black and the Wacom Karma in blue have a very similar distribution of cloud brightnesses. And we also see very similar percentages of clouds, roughly 70%. The cloud heights are also within half a kilometer, and the cloud thickness. The things that had the biggest difference were the effective radius and the number density, which I'll get to in a minute. This is a seasonal average of the vertical profile of temperature here, water vapor here, and the extinction at 3 microns, which is where Sophie is sensitive to the ice. There was a bias in the model just in its initial condition for water. But even so, by tuning the model to get temperatures that were sort of similar to the Lubkin climatology, we get dust profiles that look a lot like the Sophie observations, and we also see... This is the north. And you can see the dehydration here and hydration here in excess of what Sophie sees. And in related to Gert's question about where the peak radius is, over here, this is the mass density profile. This is the effective radius. This is number density and cloud frequency. So the peak in the average effective radius is here, and the peak in the mass density is here. We need to look at this in individual profiles, which Gert and I talked about during the break, but it's suggestive that we might see that in the model. And the effective radius profile does match pretty well, but the number density is a lot lower. And the my initial comparisons were done using the Sophie 1.01 product, and the number densities went down by about a factor of 2 in the later versions. If we look at SIPs, albedos, what I'm showing here are seasonal averages of the albedo for the model here, for SIPs here, and then difference plots using two different thresholds. So this is 1 × 10⁻⁶ per stir radian. Clouds stronger than that are included in the average, and here it's 7 × 10⁻⁶. And again, this is an older version of the SIPS data, and at the time they sort of thought that was the sensitivity where you would kind of see all of the clouds. I think that's improved since then. So these look very similar. Here, the model has more of the fainter clouds than we see in the SIPS data, but again, a fairly similar pattern. If we look at the total ice mass, this is over here. This is using the latest data from SIPS that Cora provided. You can see, even though this is a free-running model, it's getting a seasonality of the ice mass that's very similar to what we saw for the 2007 season. So the Sophie profiles, the SIPS albedos, and this total ice mass are all in agreement that the model is doing a pretty good job of recreating the ice. And this is comparing to estimates that Mike Stevens et al. Had done, looking at the latitudinal dependence of the ice mass based on SNOWY and SBUV, and Wacom comes in somewhere in between the two of these. This estimate is based on mid-solar cycle and a particular local time range. The model runs that I did for this were solar minimum and solar maximum, so I just interpolated between those. So it isn't quite the same run. And the local time variability that you see in the model isn't as strong as what you see in the observation. So that could also explain some of the differences here. So as I mentioned, the biggest difference that we see in the results here is in the number density. So over here is the probability distribution of number density, with black being the observation and blue being Sophie. And you can see it's a kind of a similar profile, but it's just shifted over towards smaller numbers. And if you look at where that happens, looking at number density versus effective radius, you can see this range up here where the reds, which are the SOFI, you get a bunch of these high number density events at low size that you don't get in the model. The model is clustered over here. One of the possibilities for why this happens is what Uwe mentioned of lack of variability in the models. So the gravity waves in the models, they're parameterized, and you get the effect of the breaking waves driving the circulation to get the temperatures. But what you don't get out of the models is the effect of the waves passing through and the temperature variability that that causes. So what we're seeing here is profiles from rockets, and you can see a lot of variability over the mean state. 20 Kelvin up here, sort of 10 or 18, I guess, there, 8 to 10 here. So what I did was I put in a wave with a temperature amplitude that I just had affect the microphysics, not put into the dynamics, so it had no dynamical feedback. And then I experimented with different sets of wavelengths and phases, and I sub-stepped the microphysics so that during one model time step, the wave could evolve in the vertical through the grid box. And when you do that, you can adjust this pattern quite a bit. If you put in just a fixed wavelength and it's short and you have a big amplitude, you'll end up with a lot of particles in this small range because you've increased nucleation by making it colder, but then you have the warm phase of the wave coming through, which prevents the particles from growing larger. So you need time to get to this end of the scale, and you need nucleation to get to this end of the scale. And so what you're seeing here is a result by putting in a perturbation that his amplitude is similar to this, but randomly picking wavelengths, some longer, some shorter, and letting that wave propagate for one period, and then randomly picking another wave. And when you do that, you can spread out the size and number distributions that you get from the model.
Chuck, is that black curve is a constant mass density?
It is.
So the left boundary presumably would have a constant mass density?
Yeah, this was set as the extinction threshold for SOFI.
So
the model does have results over to the left of this, but
so
I...
You cut it off where SOFI quits.
Right,
okay.
Just for the comparison. So now I'd like to just talk about some of what I've been trying with the latest versions of the model for other reasons. I created a new version of Karma and integrated that in with the new version of Wacom, and some enhancements that went in are some better numerics for growth and nucleation so that we can handle some of these bursts in nucleation better. And then integration with radiative transfer, which I won't be using right now, and then this ice dust coagulation. And then Wacom has some significant improvements in that we have increased horizontal resolution. We have the ability to do specified dynamics so that we can recreate the time period and not have to do just statistical comparisons. And then the gravity wave source scheme changed to be a physically based scheme, and we'll see the impact of that a little bit. So for the previous results, the out-of-the-box version of Wacom would not create the clouds that I showed you. The gravity wave scheme has to be tuned to get the temperatures just right to get correct PMC altitudes and magnitudes. And so I've started to do that process with the new gravity wave scheme in the new code. And so here you can see sort of some preliminary results from that. And the water vapor is, initial condition is fixed here. The overshoot isn't quite as much as before. The mass looks reasonable. And if we look at the cloud properties now, you may not be able to see, there's a dashed line here, which is the effective radius sampled according to SOFI's sensitivities. It uses multiple wavelengths to determine number and effective radius. And this is the sensitivity in one of those bands that limits which observations it would be able to see. But looking at that, this is now tracking very well with the effective radius and the number density. that we see from SOFI, and again has this pattern of the peak for the effective radius being below the peak in the mass in the seasonal average. But what has degraded in this simulation is the seasonality. So this is for multiple seasons. This is the Northern Hemisphere 2007, which, if you remember, the free-running version pretty much overlaid that curve. Now, to get a seasonal average correct, we see a very different distribution with too much ice in the beginning and ice going away in the middle and then coming back strong at the end of the season. And I've done other runs with other tunings, and it's a fairly robust feature of this particular parameterization that the gravity wave forcing drops off too much in the middle of the season. So that's something we've started to look at, and we think we understand some of why that's happening. So hopefully that will be improved
too. The whiteouts are due to the gravity wave forcing difference?
Yeah, if you, particularly in the Northern Hemisphere, what happens is the number of events that where waves are launched goes down in the summer, and so you'll see that the vertical motion is reduced, and then you get a warming when that happens. And I'll talk about in a minute why that a little bit about the gravity wave parameterization. This is putting back the WACOM 319 scheme into WACOM 4, and again, sort of in an untuned way, just to see, and you don't see the bite outs in the middle of the season, because this shape is really imposed by that parameterization, which is not physically based. So what are the differences between these parameterizations? So WACOM 319 and WACOM 4, they both have an orographic parameterization, but in 319, there's a background spectrum. And the idea there is that a spectrum of waves are launched everywhere, every time step. And there's a prescription to what the strength of those waves are. So, and that prescription varies with day of year and latitude. And then there's an efficiency factor that's tuned to give you the right amplitude of the impact of those waves. In WACOM 4, the idea was to do something that was more physically based, that was more tied to the fronts and convection, and not to use this background parameterization that where you're just prescribing things. So we have two new parameterizations here, one that launches waves based on convection and one that launches waves based on fronts. And this one for fronts is the one that has the biggest effect on the PMCs. And this one tries to determine regions where fronts are likely to form and launches waves only, a spectrum of waves only in those regions. And it gives it a constant amplitude. And so then the pattern of how often you exceed that threshold is essentially this efficiency factor from before. And this choice is what's kind of leading to this gap in the middle of the season. If we look at the temperatures, you can see up here we have Lupkin, Saber, and the MLS climatologies, again for the Northern Hemisphere PMC season, 70 North. And this is what the WACOM 319 model did. This is the out-of-the-box version of the SD WACOM 4, which would put the cloud heights too low. This is the version I showed you where I adjusted it, but you can see you have this thing here in the middle of season where it gets warm, and this is what happens when you put the 319 scheme back in. You're again prescribing it to look more or less like that. So I just wanted to, putting this in context of trends, because obviously nothing that I've talked about so far is trends related. You know, what are the benefits of trying to use a microphysical model to look at trends? You know, it's physically based, so you're hoping then that it'll be sensitive to all the things that could change, could have trends that might affect the clouds. So we have the nucleation based on the meteor smoke, and we can be sensitive to water temperature and temperature variability, and also to transport of dust particles, as was talked about earlier. And there, you know, with all the great observations that we have, we're getting many more constraints on how to tune these models properly, how to tune the gravity waves properly, so that we potentially can believe that it can at least handle the variability, and we can verify against this AIM time period using the specified dynamics. But what are the limitations of trying to use this? You know, I guess there's the question is, how well do we really understand each of these processes? We talked a little bit about the uncertainty in the nucleation. We need to constrain better what the dust influx is. And I've just shown you there's this large sensitivity to gravity waves that we need to have a better understanding for, and also this temperature variability. And these models are more expensive. This is about, to run this model, it costs about three times as much to run as the standard model. And one of the issues with the specified dynamics, and what I was using, is using the GEOS 5 data, and we're just using it up to about 50 kilometers. So we don't have anything to nudge the upper atmosphere. With no gaps or something else like that, we could nudge higher up and perhaps have better spatial temperatures at the higher altitudes. And it's really still to be understood, when we get the gravity waves the way we want them, how well the spatial patterns will work in that. And then a question for all of these kind of modeling approaches is, you know, when you try to verify against the time period that you have and show that you can handle the variability that you see, what does that really say about your ability to model the trends correctly? I mean, you may model and get a trend, but are you getting it for the right reasons? How do you know? And with that, I will take questions.
Okay, questions.
Karen.
Are there any?
Hang on.
Are there any measurements that would give you an indication that there are trends in the meteoric dust?
No.
There's variability in the dust, but we don't have anything for a long-term trend. And we're trying with
what? The longest-term record in 5 years.
So. And then the other question I had is, you know, there was mention of, you know, water from spacecraft going up and impacting PMCs. Can you have any kind of, I don't know, metallic bits or aerosol bits coming off from spacecraft launches that could be affecting your frequency of PMCs?
Yeah, potentially if you consider those to be ice nuclei. And there, in some of the case studies, there were observations of metal layers being enhanced as what was thought to be the shuttle plume came by. So, yeah, that could have an effect in addition to just the water.
So overall, you think that the PMC particles require ice nucleation? You're not having homogeneous nucleation?
Correct.
I guess just to follow up on Karen's comment, does your ICE algorithm allow for homogeneous nucleation should the conditions be sufficient to make that happen?
It currently doesn't, but it could.
Okay.
I could add in another nucleation mechanism, but I don't currently have that turned on.
So for the coagulation time what's a characteristic time scale for that? Is that comparable to the gravity wave period or Brunt-Weissler frequency?
For the dust?
Because you were showing that you put some gravity wave to modulate or try to change the variability of the particles, or
Yeah, there it wasn't really coagulation going on. There's no ice-ice coagulation happening.
Oh, okay.
So changing the number was really changing the amount of nucleation that was happening. And by having colder temperatures as the cold phase of the wave comes through, you enhance nucleation. There's plenty of particles, dust particles there. They're just smaller ones. And so you need the colder temperatures to get at those smaller particles.
I have a question. You're probably familiar with Linda Meghner's paper, who did one. She did 1D karma models, and she varied the meteor smoke densities over many orders of magnitude, and she found that the various parameters, ice mass and so forth, were almost invariant to huge changes in meteor dust. Could you comment on whether your model would confirm that?
I haven't done those same experiments, although obviously I could. What I did do and showed in that earlier paper was I changed the contact angle. So when you're nucleating, there's a barrier to nucleation happening. Particle has to get so big before it will actually grow. And the general assumption that's made in these models is nucleation is made very easy by the contact angle that's chosen. But there are lab studies that show that as the temperature drops, it actually gets much harder to nucleate. And the results that I showed with the temperature variability included Melissa Trainer's function for contact angle and still getting nucleation. And I tried, in the paper that I showed, I'd used different contact angles and saw that I got similar results from each of those runs. So I think if you're just looking at ice mass or something, you're going to see the same result or similar results. And if you kind of confine it to a range, you'll see similar results for number and effective radius, but those are going to be perhaps more sensitive. And then if you go to something as extreme as what Melissa had, then you can have a bigger impact on it. And without adding in the temperature variability, you can almost shut off the clouds.
I'm sorry, what do you mean by extremes?
Well, she showed, we assume that the cosine of the contact angle is about 0.95 in these simulations. And she had values down to less than 0.5. And it was, she wasn't able to measure at the mesospheric temperatures. So if you extrapolated hers down, it just drops off like crazy. So I did different approaches where you limited it to what she observed or extrapolated it down. But either one of those cases, without the extra temperature variability, really reduced the amount of PMCs that you would get.
Amy.
You showed that with your gravity wave scheme, you had that bite out, you got warmer temperatures. So we've seen that feature in a lot of the SPV seasons, Snowy, AIM. Do you think you serendipitously answered why that's happening?
I don't think so. I mean, if you look at what SIPS is saying, SIPS doesn't see that that same magnitude of drop.
So there may be
a sensitivity there that's real, but I think what is probably true is the current parameterization is overdoing it. And so I can't say, based on the little chance that I've had to look at it so far, whether there might be something real in there that
you just might want to look at it, because I know Dave Siskin, he was determined to figure out why we were getting these bite-outs, and he couldn't come up with this solution, and you might have stumbled on the answer here.
In the simulations that we've done, is that you get this very repeatable 22 days after solstice, boom, boom, boom.
That's pretty much when this bite-out happens. Almost every season. Yeah, right.
Well, and I guess the other thing I can mention is, this part here, I only did this in one simulation with the other scheme where I turned off the convective parameterization, but this feature of a lot of ice in the beginning seems to be driven by the, in the northern hemisphere, by the convective parameterization that we didn't think really would have much of an effect in the polar regions because it's mostly an equator phenomenon, but it did change this quite a bit in that one simulation. So again, everything's very preliminary, but you know, gravity waves have a big effect, and
yeah,
we need to work
the
that through.
Question would be is why 22 days after solstice you would get a warming from gravity waves?
Yeah,
so
I mean we don't have a total answer for that. We've started to look at individual cases, and you see kind of what you would expect in that the forcing seems to be reduced, the gravity wave forcing. You see the upwelling be reduced, and then in one case we were seeing like a 30 Kelvin change in temperature there, and you know all the clouds then go away. And then if you looked at the source region where the forcing is, what you saw in that case was that the forcing moved towards the equator by just a few degrees of latitude. So there was still gravity wave forcing happening, but it was in a different position than it was before, which you wouldn't get with the old parameterization because you were launching everywhere all the time. With the new parameterization, you're looking for the front. So if the fronts move, then where the forcing happens can move too. And so I don't know if that's a robust feature, but if it is, that is a possible explanation.
Well, I have one more question. One more question from Gerd.
While you're prescribing your dynamics with the MERA results, why not ANSEP? Did you see a big difference there, or?
I haven't tried any other ones with regards to PMCs. Doug Kinnison at NCAR has been using the SD WACM, the specified dynamics version, for a variety of simulations, and he tends to use the GEOS or MIRA data, feeling that that provides better simulations. Now he's looking at tropospheric and stratospheric features.
Yeah, and have you also looked into the trace gases from MERA?
From?
MERA, GEOS 5 also gives you the trace gases, so.
No, we don't nudge the trace gases at all. So WACM has full chemistry and it just does its thing and without any interference.
Yeah. But if you're kicking the dynamics, maybe kicking the chemistry helps too?
Yeah, I guess we'd have to look and see, you know, how that compares, and then if it seems like there's a large bias, then we could use nudging if we